is having its big moment in the spotlight. A popular stimulant used in ADD and ADHD treatment, experts are now saying it's been overprescribed over the past 20 years, particularly among school-aged children, and potentially has contributed to a wider stimulant epidemic across the country. While everyone has grown up with the drugs are bad messaging, what happens when you've been told your whole life the very drug you're misusing is also what you've been told you need to take, not only to succeed, but to participate in the first place? Today we're going to talk about what's really going on behind the popularity of Adderall, and why we may be seeing the consequences of its widespread distribution for years to come. A mixture of amphetamine and dextroamphetamine salts, Adderall and other stimulants like methamphetamine and cocaine are classified by the United States government as a Schedule II substance, meaning it's a substance with a high risk of abuse, but with some very limited medical applications. It also has the capability of building tolerance, which does actually contribute to its potential of abuse. Now, the scheduling system is imperfect in its own ways, but the risks that stimulants pose, not only for addiction, but for cardiovascular issues, organ failure, and potential overdose, are serious and are often underplayed by pharmaceutical companies. In universities across the United States, though, it's known as the A-plus pill, and it's available anywhere students have a friend with a prescription. Used supposedly as a performance enhancer to get better grades and test scores, its neurocognitive enhancement capabilities aren't backed up by any of the double-blind studies when students are given Adderall or a placebo before taking a test. So if it doesn't actually bring about better test scores, even in the long term, why is it so popular for people to misuse it? The answer is a bit complicated. While we can point fingers at our distracting modern world, along with 2 decades of reduced recess times, increased school requirements for test scores, and decreased funding for public schools in the United States, Adderall is just the newest iteration of the post-industrialized world's love affair with stimulants and productivity. What's a bit different this time, though, is that users are seeing a lot more benefits now before they do drawbacks. And in the world of go fast and break things, most of those drawbacks are just seen as necessary sacrifices for success in a world where the competition never ends, and your replacement will be in the door before you're even out of it. As for college students, the popularity of amphetamines for performance enhancement was first noted in Time magazine in 1937. They didn't need a prescription. Amphetamine inhalers and pills were available at most pharmacies, but the big difference we see now between amphetamine misuse then and misuse today is the motivations. College students use amphetamines alongside alcohol, nicotine, cannabis, and even heroin on occasion, mostly for the purpose of partying and getting high. Today, 50 to 89% of college students who use amphetamines do so specifically for academic motivations. While some of our own ethnographic data, participants said they would occasionally use it to stay awake and claim they would be able to drink more at parties, that wasn't the main motivation, and almost no respondents said they bought stimulants for that specific purpose, and it was never on a regular basis. Also, the issue with drinking alcohol when you're on stimulants is that it doesn't actually allow you to drink more, it just holds off the effects until after the stimulant wears off. So that's why it's so easy to get alcohol poisoning when you're taking stimulants, because you don't recognize how drunk you are until it may be too late. And while popular for college students, it's also the new drug of choice for pretty much anyone involved in modern capitalism, from CEOs and celebrity business managers to Silicon Valley techies and Wall Street interns. The idea that Adderall helps you be a better capitalist is almost a mantra to keep up with some of the unrealistic demands that workers are asked to accomplish as quickly as possible. And if not, the next guy's already waiting. This isn't amphetamine's first brush with success, or the second, but it's been a long time since the stimulants were available with a prescription. Cocaine at the time was restricted to a doctor's prescription, but it wasn't difficult to get one, particularly for the upper class, to receive a prescription for pretty much anything under the sun. But for the majority of Americans, it was benzodrine and other over-the-counter amphetamines that were most commonly used and abused between the 1930s up until the cocaine boom of the 1970s to 90s. The mid-20th century's drug boogeyman had already switched from amphetamines to heroin and cannabis, so amphetamines were just seen as medicine instead of dangerous narcotics as others were being painted as at the time. That, however, didn't stop it from being used as snake oil for pretty much every ailment possible at the time, even some imagined ones. Benzedrine was first trademarked by Smith, Klein, and French in 1928 and was first available for use in 1929, kicking off 40 years of it being used for everything. And I mean everything. Used as a weight loss pill, an antidepressant, a menopause cure, anesthesia, both general and local, and even was usually mixed in children's cough and cold medicine. Medicine which would also often include ingredients such as codeine, morphine, and even cannabis on occasion in the early days. Which, I guess, is one way to get your child to stop coughing. Benzedrine was widely available over-the-counter, as were many other amphetamines from different companies, but benzedrine was the Allied forces' choice of drug for keeping fighter pilots and other soldiers awake for days at a time sometimes during the war. It was considered essential supplies and distributed widely, but they weren't the only ones utilizing amphetamines in the war effort. The Axis powers, and infamously the Nazi Party, used methamphetamine primarily to not only keep their soldiers awake, but to help cut down on rations soldiers needed if they didn't feel the need to eat for days at a time. But at the same time it was being distributed as a patriotic necessity overseas, black laborers back home were being criminalized and stereotyped for their usage. Despite the same motivations for use, staying awake, not needing to eat, and most importantly, numbing out the pain from backbreaking labor day in, day out, there was no real racial difference in amphetamine use at the time. It was black and poor white users who were ridiculed and criticized for it, despite it being used fairly equally among not only race, but socioeconomic class. During every drug epidemic, the legislation and restrictions that attempt to contain the crisis consistently harm black communities and users significantly more than even major cartel and mob creators and distributors who happen to, well, not be black, quite frankly. We saw it during the first cocaine epidemic, and we saw it during the second, when the ongoing and largely unsuccessful war on drugs began. We continue to see this difference today in who is being criminalized, even just for cannabis use, who is imprisoned for minor drug crime charges, and even the sentencing severity for many of these charges. Even today, our perceptions of stimulant users varies widely by race and socioeconomic class. When we often think of stimulant addicts, the first images that come to mind are cooked meth in trailer parks, or cocaine dealers in strip clubs, or even quote-unquote tweakers at the bus stop many avoid even looking at when they're right next to us. But the reality is, there's a whole lot of addicts who are getting their amphetamine fix through prescriptions, just as many opiate users became addicted through their prescription opiates. The majority of prescription stimulant users today are now adults, with a notable reduction in prescriptions in children over the last 5 years. But that hasn't stopped the parents and now grown adults who just grew up being told they needed to take Adderall or Ritalin to participate in society in the first place. The reality is, it's not just cooked meth. It's the college students who are taking the A-plus pill and Silicon Valley grunts who are supposed to be up for 2 days at a time. That's who our stimulant addicts are today, and that's what they look like. Trailer parks and used cooked meth don't exist. Or that there isn't a large subset of working class people who still use crack cocaine and methamphetamine and other kinds of quote-unquote illicit forms of drugs. It's just that often those images are still warped by stereotypes that ignore the very real socioeconomic impacts of systemic racism, classism, and so many other issues that exist in our society. That also isn't to say that Adderall and other prescription stimulants have absolutely no medical uses. They can legitimately be life-changing for the people who need them. The issue is, most people who take them really don't need them, and the reasons that most people take them for, like weight loss and for staving off sleep, don't actually work out in the long run once you start building up a tolerance, which happens very, very quickly, often within weeks. But for people who actually do have moderate to severe ADHD symptoms that interfere with their life and daily functioning, the regulatory effects stimulants can have on them really can be life-changing. The issue was, for too long, people without debilitating or even legitimate ADHD symptoms were able to receive prescriptions for decades. And today, there's a lack of awareness that not only is Adderall a legitimately dangerous drug if taken improperly and if you don't need it, but sharing those prescriptions with anybody, even your own family, is a federal crime with hefty charges and fines attached. The Netflix documentary Take Your Pills gives a snippet of the kind of consequences the cultural pressure caused not only in college students, but in our current capitalist environment, especially in business, technology, and even in athletics. The documentary itself only focuses on one aspect of the epidemic in its almost 2 hours, and it doesn't dive into any of the benefits of treating ADHD and ADD symptoms with stimulants, or other therapies that are shown to be more effective than stimulants. It does provide a glimpse into the world of the industry side of the overdiagnosis crisis, and what was driving it for almost three whole decades in children who obviously did not have ADD or ADHD. What the documentary does do really well is it has interviews and explanations from the leading researchers themselves, like Dr. Carl Hart, the chair of psychology at Columbia University, Dr. Martha Farah, a leading cognitive neuroscientist at the University of Pennsylvania, and Anjan Chatterjee, chair of the neurology department also at University of Pennsylvania. Hart, Farah, and Chatterjee are all well-respected scientists who have extensively studied the effects of psychoactive substances on the brain. Dr. Farah in particular is known for her initial studies showing no difference in cognitive enhancement between Adderall and placebo in adults without ADHD, and a study which has been successfully replicated numerous times since. And while the documentary is a good resource about the drawbacks of Adderall and this kind of overdiagnosis, there are still legitimate medical benefits. And I wanted to talk to somebody who had seen both of the extremes when it comes to stimulants and this overprescription. Dr. Bruce Baker is a board-certified addictionist, and while he often sees the most dire cases of stimulant addiction, he's also seen cases where sometimes a prescription stimulant intervention has drastically improved a patient's quality of life. Not only does he have the experience, but he has spent thousands of hours lecturing everybody from master's students and residents to Michigan State Police and members of Michigan's legislature about drug education, and has even held seminars at Grand Valley State University in the past few years at the request of certain faculty. So if anybody was going to know anything about the stimulant epidemic, it was going to be him. All right, so Dr. Baker,
yes.
What can you tell me about the ongoing prescription stimulant epidemic?
Well, I'm an addiction specialist, and one of the drugs that I don't write for are the stimulants, because very few people need them, and very few adults, if any, require them, but people do want them. I want to talk a little bit about the stimulants itself, because these are chemicals that we as human beings seem to have fallen in love with, because we're talking about the phenethylamines, and these include things like amphetamine, which is alpha methyl phenethylamine, which is one of the basic stimulants. Adderall is a derivative. Also, there's Vyvanse. There's multiple stimulants that are available for adults and children. Unfortunately, this class of drugs causes tolerance in that your brain will adjust the number of receptors to what is there. So if you have a whole bunch of amphetamine, you don't need quite as many receptors. But if you stop amphetamines, you go to sleep because the stimulation is now gone. The stimulants that are used today, Ritalin, Adderall, Vyvanse, are probably the three main ones. There's Focalin, which is an older preparation, but they all differ somewhat in their properties, and they all have high abuse potential. And we know through time that people do become tolerant to these, as they used to be used for weight reduction. And people would lose weight initially, and over the next 60 to 90 days, gain every pound back and probably more, because they become tolerant to the stimulants. Today, there's also stimulants that are not addictive that have been developed. One is Provigil, the other is Nuvigil, and these are stimulants that are work best for what we call shift workers disease, people who work third shift and have a hard time staying awake when they need to be awake. And these two medications seem to be very effective. I prescribed it for nurses, and they seem, you know, no problems with it and no signs of any intolerance or abuse. So they do work. The stimulants that are out there today for ADD, ADHD, the problem being is that, again, they are highly addictive. For children who use Ritalin, and Ritalin is very seldom abused. I have had one patient in my practice in the past 15 years who had a problem with Ritalin. And Ritalin is not a drug really of abuse for a number of reasons. Number one, it takes too long for an onset. So you don't get a real heavy buzz right at the beginning, but it definitely awakens you. The other issue with Ritalin, luckily, is it can't be used intravenously. So it can't be crushed up and injected, because once you inject the substance, it has 10 times the potency of eating it orally. So that 10 milligrams of morphine injectable, you would have to give 100 milligrams of morphine by mouth.
Okay.
So you get 10 times the mileage. The Ritalin is also can be used as skin popping. I have seen that very, very seldom. And plus, Ritalin only lasts 4 to 5 hours. They say 4 to 6. It's more like 3 to 5. And multiple dosing during the day, and that becomes difficult. Adderall is the classic amphetamine. Again, it's the backbone structure are called phenethylamines. And from this structure, there's all sorts of medications or drugs that come from those. One of them is ecstasy, methylene dioxide. The MDMA is a derivative. So is mescaline, can be made from it. And they use this structure, these phenethylamines, and it really does seem like human beings have a real, they really seem to love them in whatever form they are.
They stimulate.
Exactly.
He also talks about the initial stimulant boom among college students for improving test scores. Surprisingly, started as a study by a university.
It's going back, stimulants were never an issue till 1955. And it was University of Wisconsin. It was the first time a stimulant was given to a college student. And it was part of one of the psychology classes where they pay you $5 to take a medicine or take a test. And they did the initial study. Within 1 year, please keep in mind there was no internet. Making a long distance phone call was a big deal. Cars didn't travel like they do today. Within 1 year, amphetamines were on every campus across the country. That's how fast it ran through the college crowd. It's incredible.
So this ain't new.
This is nothing new. Amphetamines were used long ago as a mother's little helper. I think you've seen the little tin, and it has mom serving a turkey all happy, and it's because she was eating a pile of meth before she made dinner. But it was legal back then.
And the United States isn't the only country to see the swing from stimulants to downers, as these have been global trends for a very, very long time.
They were used to keep people awake for nighttime sorties and for their troops. This is nothing new. This goes back to 1500 BC, when the troops would be given some form of leaf that had a stimulant. And not only did they fight without sleep, but they didn't eat a whole lot. So these were ideal for warfare. And it's continued into today. We still use amphetamines and methamphetamine for some of our Air Force pilots who are flying at night and are too tired. And there was an incident about 25 years ago, I think it was 25 years ago during the Iraq War, when we accidentally bombed some Canadians and killed a bunch of them. And the issue there was our pilots were using stimulants. That was part of their routine, even though they weren't tired. And they made a mistake. And it was a huge mistake. So the armed forces, I'm sure, has taken another look, and I have no idea if it's still being used at this day. I doubt it, but this was the same thing in post-war Japan, where the problem was the stimulants during the war, and afterwards they had an epidemic of deaths from barbiturates. It's the swing. It's from one end to the other. It's stimulants, and then it's depressants, and then it's stimulants again. And if you want to take a look, if we have a problem with stimulants, go to any gas station that sells pop and count the number of drinks that are energy drinks. And you will find that it's 2/3 of what's being sold are energy drinks. The stimulants are here. They've made a comeback. And this is exactly what we saw in post-World War II.
While he does occasionally see Adderall abuse in his line of work, because of the areas he works in, meth is a much, much bigger issue. He also cleared a common misconception about meth mouth.
Heroin is not coming through. The fentanyl, a lot of people died from fentanyl being put in the heroin. And there's not a whole lot left except methamphetamine, which is dirt cheap to make. Uncle Joe makes it anytime and has everybody over for meth. And who wouldn't want to feel like a hero? Absolutely on top of the world for 3 days in a row. You don't need to eat. You feel the best you've ever felt. And it's the most fun you've had in years. Asking people to walk away from that cold turkey is very difficult because we have no treatment for methamphetamines. None. It's a tough life. And people have a, I'd say walk away from it, but it's, you gotta be so dedicated and willing really to go to long-term treatment. Look at crime rate with methamphetamine here in the county I live in, which is 15,000 people. Anybody who's been admitted through law enforcement for methamphetamine use, everyone has relapsed within 6 months and been returned to jail. This is costing us a fortune, if not lives right up front. So the methamphetamine, and it comes in various forms. It comes, you can inject it, and that's what they used to do in the 50s. They used to have things called splash parties. And evidently the soldiers from the Korean War came back with a methamphetamine habit that they learned about, and that's injecting methamphetamine. And evidently when you inject it, it makes you feel like there's cold water being splashed on your face. And back in the late 50s, when they had block parties, and they went to the pharmacy, picked up syringes and methamphetamine because it was legal. And that's how parties went in the 50s. It was not unusual to be injecting meth.
All right.
It's a very bad substance because people make really bad decisions after being awake for 3 days. You're definitely not thinking about other people. And to look at, I'm sure you've seen that poster of the meth mouth and all that stuff. Well, people say it's from the heavy metals that make methamphetamine, and that's not true. The reason people get that kind of mouth is because they're not hungry, but they need energy, so they drink lots of sugar. Lots and lots of sugar. And let's face it, if you're on top of the world and invincible, you're not going to brush your teeth for 3 days either. So your gums begin to overgrow. And then when the methamphetamine is wearing off, you sleep for 2 or 3 days. So you've gone really a week without any oral hygiene. And that's meth mouth. That's how it happens. It's from the consequences.
Another concern? Adderall isn't actually meant to be used to keep you awake. The tolerance builds too quickly and you get too used to the stimulating effects, making it not effective at actually staving off sleep.
The amphetamines, their only indication is ADHD. If you require an amphetamine to stay awake, it's the wrong drug. It's not to be used that way. It shouldn't be used that way. And anybody who prescribes it that way is risking their medical license because it is not that. And it is not for weight loss because you gain it all back. You become tolerant to it. The number of adults that require an amphetamine for their life are few and far between. Very, very few people. I have seen people who do need it and do well afterwards. They get balanced. But Adderall, all amphetamines are not to stay awake. It's never been an indication for it. And when patients come in, and I deal with an interesting population, they know I don't prescribe stimulants because it's written on my desk in big letters that we do not prescribe stimulants or opiates routinely for adults. And very few people ask once they read the sign. Although some people still ask, very few people give me a hard time. And the other problem with the amphetamines, it's currency. You know, I'll trade you 330 milligram Adderall for that Coke. That's how it happens. That's the problem with the pills and the films. It becomes a currency.
And while that may sound extreme, Dr. Baker offered an example from his own practice as to how he's seen these stimulants actually help people.
And I have met one person who I prescribed Ritalin for, who was also a heroin addict, that was recovering and within 3 weeks had a full-time job because he couldn't sit still. And I watched him. I thought he was kidding. He could not sit still. And then he comes in after a week of Ritalin, and it is a new person. I mean, absolutely, I couldn't believe it. If you want to know if somebody is truly ADHD or ADD, they don't like the amphetamines. It makes them feel normal again, because that's what it does. It slows up that brain. So in my practice, patients, they don't like the amphetamine. It doesn't make them feel good. Whereas someone else, they're wired to the ceiling.
And as a physician, stimulants aren't his first and only choice of treatment for ADHD, especially for more mild cases.
And biofeedback works very well for ADD and ADHD. And instead of drugs being the first line of treatment, I think we should look at alternatives first and use the drugs for the last.
So if nobody's ever really going to stop using, what's the solution? Dr. Baker says, just proper education.
The amphetamines have always been a problem. What do you do? You know, the best thing you can do is educate people. And if people know what you and I know, they would choose not to do it. Because they're in college, they're got to be semi-bright. So giving them the information should be enough for them to really start thinking. But we need to get them the information. It's a problem. It's the class of drugs, again, these phenethylamines, and I encourage you to really take a look at what comes from it. Ecstasy is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll understand this is a special group, and the amphetamines are part of it. You'll never be able to fix it or stop it, but again, if we can educate people enough that, first of all, you don't know what you're really eating. Somebody, and I've had a number of healthcare professionals, because that was part of what I did working with Health Professional Recovery Program, I didn't know what was in the pill. Well, you know what? You're a grown-up. And if you don't know what's in the pill, why did you eat it? And this is, it's a common, not common, but not an uncommon explanation. So tell them right up front, if you start eating your buddy's meds, you don't know what's in it. And I've seen people get poisoned. One of my patients here in Newaygo County thought she was going to get meth. Next thing she knew, she woke up 2 days later, black and blue, and has no recollection of what happened to her. And they were pushing that as methamphetamine. I'm just pleased that I have a relationship with my patients where they can tell me these things. And she was black and blue. And it was somebody who knew somebody at a party who gave it to her. And it's no different than the college party. And the other issue that comes up, especially during raves or parties where pills are being passed out, like ecstasy, is to have someone testing them. They don't know what they're eating. Why not test it? Because if it's high-dose fentanyl, they're going to die. So, but people don't want that. They just don't want them at the parties, but the bottom line is they're going to the parties. This is the reality. Why not make it safe?
If they're going to be doing it.
Safer.
Yeah, if they're going to be doing it anyways.
Right.
Why not?
Let's be responsible adults and make sure they're getting what they should.
Yeah. As far as national trends go, though, there is some hope.
When mom and dad are eating them, or as I've seen in many practices, mom and dad seem to lose the Ritalin prescription quite frequently and need to come and get another one. That used to be more common, and today with all the red flags going up and the prescription monitoring service for the state of Michigan, we don't see that much. There's a study called Monitoring the Future, which is out of University of Michigan, where they look at 42,000 high schoolers, 8th, 10th, and 12th grade, and they look at their drug use and how they view drugs. And it's very interesting that according to the statistics, the amphetamine use is actually down. It didn't go up, it didn't stay the same, but it went down. And it's very, I can't remember the exact numbers, but they were not impressive. So I'm not sure where they're getting their information, because what I'm hearing is it's a real epidemic on campus, and yet statistically from the Center for Disease Control, it appears as though it's decreasing.
In the end, Dr. Baker leaves us with some very sage advice I think we all need to take a little bit more often. So that's your advice? Keep educating, be safe, be smart, be responsible?
And be around other people. Don't isolate. That always helps. And if you want to know, I always tell my patients, because they say, is this a good idea? And I'm only with them for a short period of their life. So I tell them, you know what you should do? Ask yourself, would you tell your mother this? And if you don't want to tell your mother this, it's probably not a good idea. It's as simple as that.